We'll look at amateur radio and the law in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this Rain Report. One of the more significant forums held each year at the Dayton Hamvention is the Amateur Radio and the Law Forum, moderated by Jim O'Connell, W9WU. A newcomer to the forum this year was Dale Schwartz, K4ROZ, an ARRL volunteer counsel from the Atlanta, Georgia area.
I've been a ham for more than 50 years, and I guess I've been a volunteer counsel, I don't know how many years, at least 20 at least. I practice immigration law, far cry from ham radio, although maybe it's why I like to DX so much, but I can't emphasize enough, the most critical legal analysis you'll ever have with putting up a tower is that before you buy your house, you have really got to get your ducks lined up. There have been studies done that show that about 80% of the decisions as to what home to buy are made by people's wives. They like the kitchen. The shutters were the right color. I don't know what the reasons are, but their wives do it, and we henpecked husbands always go along with their decisions. And it's not till after the closing that we realize, oh, my God, we might not be able to put up an antenna. And I've got friends that some of them are well-known de-expeditioners that live in my area of Atlanta who are restricted on their properties from putting up decent towers, and they have all kinds of stealth antennas and wires hanging in the trees that their neighbors don't even know exist. And I'll tell you about one of those in a minute. But it's really important to check out these things before you buy the house. Now, when you are buying a home in a new subdivision, they're so eager to sell those lots and houses that oftentimes the developer will grandfather you in and give you specific permission in a deed or in a covenant or whatever to let you put up that tower. And I've seen hams successfully negotiate that. Also, I've seen amateurs who were able to convince their homeowners associations that it's okay to put up a tower, often inviting them to have one of their board meetings at your home, letting them all talk to someone in Europe on the radio. That usually is a major step towards getting permission from them to do it when they realize you're not some alien from outer space trying to communicate with the mothership. Those are important things to think about. I've even seen some hams recently use what I call chicanery or trickery or deceit. To get permission. No, they weren't. In fact, I admired their stick-to-itiveness in this. I have a really good friend in Atlanta whose name I won't mention for fear that he'll get kicked out of the neighborhood. But he persuaded his homeowners association late last fall to allow him to put up a very special high-definition satellite dish 30 feet above his roof. He gave them a picture of what you would instantly recognize a spider beam, you know, a hex. And he is just having a ball now after 10 years of wire antennas. So it looks kind of like a satellite dish. It really does, you know. Everybody in the room knows that PRB1 only applies to government units, states, counties, municipalities, et cetera, and does not apply to homeowner association. Many years ago, when the FCC was considering PRB1, they made a reasoned decision above strenuous objection from the league to exclude the reach of PRB1 from homeowners associations, restrictive covenants, CCNRs, etc. The theory being that was a private matter between you and whoever you bought the property from, or real estate laws to covenants that run with the land and that sort of thing, and that if you were foolish enough to buy that piece of property, knowing that those covenants existed, and we're all presumed to know what's on the record, so that's why you have to get it checked, as he said, before you buy the property, that they weren't going to protect you. Now, there's something going on now which gives me a great deal of hope, in that just a couple of months ago, Congress passed a bill, I think it was an appropriations bill, but a rider to it instructed the FCC to do a further study on the effect of these CCNRs and restrictive covenants, et cetera, on the ability to provide emergency communications by ham radio operators. Now, when I was a youngster, I worked in the U.S. Senate, and I hope it's as true today as it was back then. But when Congress does something like that, they are sending a strong message to the federal agency that they don't like what's going on now and they want them to change it. So there's a possibility that the FCC, I think from my mouth to God's ears, that that the FCC will take up that gauntlet and do something. And if they apply PRB1 to all real estate subdivisions, et cetera, in America, tens of thousands of hams are going to get incredible relief, and they won't need much service from us volunteer counsel anymore, I would hope. I'm optimistic about that. I'm not sure Chris Imlay and the league would agree as to my optimism. They're cautiously optimistic, I think Cliff would agree. But you have to understand the difference between public and private restrictions when it comes to PRB1. Abraham Lincoln was right that he who represents himself has a fool for a client. I was off the air personally for a few years. We expanded our home, and I had to take down this beautiful 75-foot-high Roan tower that I had chimney-mounted to a very tall chimney in our house. But when we expanded the house, the tower would have come up right through the middle of our brand new shower. So it went. And it was at the bottom of the doldrums of the sunspot cycle last time, so it didn't bother me that much for a few years. And then about 3 years ago, I decided I wanted to get back on the air. So we can't get a backhoe into my backyard. We decided years ago that we were going to give up trying to grow grass in the front yard, too many trees, too much shade. And so we had it hardscaped with lots of nice shrubs and bushes and some dry creek beds put in, and it's really pretty, but there's no access to the backyard anymore. So my handyman and his merry men dug a very good 6-foot deep hole to mount my new tower, which I decided would go very nicely at this one spot in the corner behind my house. And we got the tower up after pouring the concrete. By the way, I must tell you what a great engineer I am. I estimated it would take 40 bags of sackcrete or concrete to do this job. So we brought the 40 bags and one of those mixing machines we rented from Home Depot. And about 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they started mixing this stuff. It took a lot longer than I realized it would take to mix. And at 8:30 at night, we ran out of concrete, and I looked down, and the damn hole was only half full. And I realized that if we waited till morning, this concrete is going to start hardening, and you can't pour new concrete on top of it because it won't bond together, and then you'll have a nice rocky tower.
You're listening to a talk by Atlanta, Georgia ARRL Volunteer Counsel Dale Schwartz, K4ROZ. We'll conclude our excerpt from Dale's 2012 Dayton Hamvention talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report, available on Twitter.
So we jumped in the truck and we ran to Home Depot, and just as the guy was about to lock the door, we pushed him out of the way and went in and got 40 more bags of concrete. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, this concrete machine was old, and every time it made a complete revolution, it came out with a loud squeak. And some of the neighbors came out in their bathrobes at 2 in the morning wondering why we had all these construction lights going, you know, like they have out on the highway, where this noise was coming from. But my neighbor attacked me like a banshee. And I realized the height of this tower, even when nested, was too close to the sideline of the property now. You know, I'm a lawyer. I should have figured that out. But I was so excited about putting up this thing. And discretion being the better part of valor, because as you know, we moved it at great expense. But as you know, PRB1 still allows municipalities to do things that regulate safety. You know, no ham's going to be allowed to put up a 150-foot tower near the approach of a runway at an airport, or hams have lost cases where they try to put towers up in their front yard when they could have used the backyard. And the counties and cities have been successful in fighting those. Now, if you have no backyard or there's no way to do it, then you're probably going to get away with being able to put it up in the front yard. But sideline restrictions, front yard, back lot restrictions, you got to make sure that you're putting in the right place. I learned the hard way. But, you know, it's about 5 feet lower than it would have been in the other spot, and it really doesn't make any difference. I luckily live on the tallest hill in Atlanta, so that makes a bit of a difference. Some hams have not been so successful. Almost everybody in the room has heard about the case that came out of Palmdale, California last year, where ham WB6X, who was an immigrant to America from, I believe, a former Soviet country, got permission to put up a tower and erected a tower. And he also had a vertical antenna on his roof. And then they told him he had to tear down the tower and that he couldn't put it up. And they, of course, went to court. Now, for us volunteer counsel, there's an important lesson to be learned here, because he didn't fare so well in the California Court of Appeals. Some things the league brags about, well, we won part of this case, and we did. The Court of Appeals said that the county could not regulate RFI, TVI, that sort of thing, that only the FCC could do that because they'd preempted the field. But in PRB1, there's some language about municipalities and government agencies making a, quote, reasonable accommodation to a ham to make sure that they can do what they need to do. A lot of times counties will tell you you can't go over 30 feet or 50 feet or whatever. There's some wonderful publications on the ARRL.org website about why hams need to get height to do certain kinds of things. You know, all the ham has to say is he's a moon bounce guy or a VHF guy and I need to get up above 100 feet to do what I'm going to do to be able to communicate. And usually you can win those kind of cases. But it's very hard to win these cases in state courts. I must tell you that state court judges don't care much about preemption in the FCC and the federal government. So if you have a choice, normally you want to be in federal court, where the odds are really very, very good statistically that you will be able to win this case. There's some rumor that this case was brought in the state court rather than the federal court because under California law, had this ham won his case, he would have been reimbursed by the county for or city for his legal fees. And that may have made a difference to a guy that really couldn't afford to do this kind of litigation. But it turns out to have been a not very smart choice because at the end of the day, the Court of Appeals ruled that his little vertical antenna on the roof of his house was a reasonable accommodation and that he could communicate adequately with that. I have tried to contact him to find out whatever happened. Did they appeal any further? There's nothing that we can find on the internet, and he hadn't answered any of my emails, so I'm not sure what happened. But that's a classic case of maybe they shouldn't have been in that court and made the kind of arguments that they made. The comment period has now closed on the FCC's request for information about hams and restrictive covenants and subdivisions, et cetera. And thank God for the ham community. Over 1,800 hams sent emails to the ARRL. And they have consolidated all of those and given lots of examples. I urge all of you to look at the ARRL website because there's a treasure trove of information on there, including something that I didn't realize till I was doing a little bit of study for this talk. Not only is there a volunteer council, but there's a volunteer consulting engineer program where consulting engineers who care about AM radio have agreed to give some time. I've never had the opportunity to make use of that, but I would suggest that you do that. I have a good feeling about what the FCC might do. I'm probably the least technical ham at this entire Dayton hamvention. But many years ago, we had a new baby at home, and in the middle of the night, she woke up, and my wife begged me to go change her diaper, that it was my turn. I got on the air, and I was talking to a priest in Managua, Nicaragua, and in the middle of a sentence, boom, he went off the air. Now, electricity's not too good down there, even in these days. But they had had a horrendous earthquake. I think more than 100,000 people died in the early 1970s. And normally you would tune around and talk to someone else, but I guess I was a little bit groggy and I just left it on that frequency. And he came back up about 3 or 4 minutes later and he's yelling in Spanish. And anyway, I picked up a few odd words, you know, Holocaust, fire, earthquake, and I knew something terrible had happened. So I wound up plugging him into the State Department and ultimately the Pentagon, and they dispatched C-130 airplanes from Florida, Texas, and Louisiana. And for several hours, this ham was about the only communication in and out of Nicaragua. Now, my wife realized that something was going on by the time she woke up, and she called the local TV station. So I remember I was wearing a red and white checked bathrobe that my mother-in-law had given me. It's the ugliest damn thing you could imagine. And I hadn't shaved, and I'm smoking, and I used to smoke. And I got coffee and an ashtray full of cigarette butts, and all three of the local TV stations are there. And that night it was on all the major national networks. And 2 weeks later, I got a wonderful letter. It's just kind of being in the wrong place at the wrong time or whatever. But I got a letter from Dean Birch, who many of you will remember was chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. Dear Mr. Schwartz, the CBS Huntley Brinkley Evening News gave me your name. I saw this and this on television. And he says, there are five commissioners, and none of us are amateur radio operators. He said, we'd like to put on a little 30-minute program for the commission on the public service aspects of ham radio. So I called Harry Daniels, who was the president of the ARRL at the time, and Harry and I went down to Washington. Now, what was going on that year, and this shows you the importance of these 1,800 hams who answered this thing for the league, what was going on that year was the CB industry, the electronics industry, which had a very powerful lobby, was trying to take a big hunk of 10 meters away from us. Some of you will remember that big fight. We were not optimistic that we would win that fight against this well-financed and well-oiled machine of the electronics industry. When we got to Washington to make our little presentation, a fellow named Charlie Higginbotham, who was in charge of the Citizens Radio Service, which I guess was ham radio and CB, warned Harry and I out in the hall that because that other matter was a contested matter, we were not allowed to talk about that because it would have been an ex parte communication because the communications industry wasn't there that day. And I told five or six anecdotal stories. I told them about the Nicaragua thing in great detail and some other things that I and some friends had been involved in. And I could see these commissioners were fascinated with what hams did in times of emergency. So at the very end, and Higginbotham is sitting about two rows behind where I was speaking at the podium. I'm facing them and he's behind me. I said, look, we're in a great space war with the Soviets. I said, ham radio is a major feeder for our electronics and engineering schools in America. I said, if we take away frequencies from hams and make it less desirable for young people to want to get into our hobby, it's going to hurt us from a national security point of view. I could smell the smoke coming out of Higginbotham's ears behind me. Oh, he got me out in the hall and chewed me out, and I basically told him I didn't care. And 2 months later, the commission voted not to take any of 10 meters away from us. The league gave us a small mention in QST, but Wayne Green put my picture on the cover of 73 magazines. So having these stories and getting them up before the commission and members of Congress is a very important thing, and that's a role that all of you have helped us with. I'm somewhat optimistic that we may get some relief here.
Dale Schwartz, K4ROZ, ARRL Volunteer Counsel from Atlanta, Georgia, as excerpted from his 2012 Dayton Hamvention talk given during the Amateur Radio and the Law Forum. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2012 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for everyone connected with these Rain Reports, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.